Andy?
Thanks, Andy.
Yep.
Can you hear us fine here?
Yes.
Okay, well, good.
Yeah.
The speakers are, the mics are up in the ceiling tiles.
Okay, just, it's nice to be, our last meeting was virtual, so it's nice to be in person again. Before we get started, I just wanted to note, looks like we have everybody here but Jamie. So we'll make sure we get that reflected.
That's a person? No, that's not her.
She had indicated that this wasn't a good time. This was the best time for most people, but.
Okay.
So first item on the agenda we have is approval of the minutes from the last quarterly meeting in January 18th.
I read through the minutes and found one minor error that I reported in the surety to correct.
Okay. Would entertain a motion for the minutes?
I recommend we approve the minutes.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
It's moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 I did my best Bob Berman.
Any opposed?
He's the reader, right?
Hearing none. Moving along.
The editor.
The editor.
You know, I can provide a quick, you know, this is a standard topic we have on here, which is the, you know, kind of where we're at with licensed short-term rentals, cap and waitlist. Next item will be the enforcement update that Jim Fulmer and the chief of his back will tackle. And I suspect we'll spend a little bit of time on the last item, which is kind of an outline of potential revisions to the short-term rental ordinance to improve implementation. The last meeting, that was a suggestion that, you know, this is still a temporary work group. Under the last resolution, this work group is impaneled through the end of the year with a set of recommendations due in September. And so this is my attempt to begin to kind of frame some of the issues, potential ordinance changes, at least for you to kind of think about and share your thoughts on. So first up, in terms of, you know, where we're at with our short-term rental counts, again, it's pretty stable because we are at the license cap and we have, you know, we have a wait list. Currently, the wait list is sitting at 70 or thereabouts.
70, my goodness.
And so currently we have 186 active vacation rental dwellings, which is a subset of the short-term rentals. Of that number, 148 are inside the area where they're permissible and 38 are in the area where they're phasing out as ownership changes. We have an additional 8 individuals that were on the wait list the last go around that are working through the process. It's not uncommon for somebody who's choosing to go from the wait list to actually getting licensed to take some time. They may have a tenant, you know, or tenants in their existing unit that they're providing time to transition out. And often they have changes they need to or want to make to their unit before they make it available for short-term rental purposes, because they're taking it either from a month-to-month tenancy to that purpose, or it was vacant. And they were using it seasonally. So it's not uncommon that, you know, these are folks that had the opportunity to come off the wait list last fall and are just still working through that process. We fully expect, which, and this is kind of, you know, how that typically works, is that they will get that wrapped up in time for the upcoming summer season, because that's what they're gearing towards. That's the other thing. You know, when folks, the timing works pretty good because they're notified in the fall, that gives folks plenty of time to gear up for that. And then in the winter off season, lots of folks have other things they're dealing with, so it gives them plenty of time to get ready. We do have one that was sold inside the an area where they're transferable. That'd be C2 or adjacent to C2, and so those, you know, that takes a little time for the transition. And then we have some that are inactive, where they could reactivate within a 12-month period. We have to keep those available. We do have those circumstances happen where somebody, for whatever reason, elected not to renew and then changes their mind in a few months and does, you know, because they carry a non-conforming status, they have 12 months before their license fully, their chance to get a license fully goes away. So, what else would I add? You know, two B&Bs. We've had two or three B&Bs through this entire time. That doesn't change a whole lot. You really have to have a special property for that kind of thing. And home shares is pretty static too. We have five. And again, B&Bs and home shares, they're permissible citywide. Bill?
Minor correction.
Mm-hmm.
The waitlist applications in process should say in overlay zone instead of over lazy.
Yeah.
It's true. Good catch.
It's a good type.
Cool. Thank you, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the beauty of spell check, I bet. Auto-correct. Any other questions on this particular front?
Derek, could you just refresh my memory? When a short-term rental is sold inside the overlay zone, under what circumstances is the license transferable?
The property needs to be in a tourist commercial zone or immediately adjacent to it.
Okay. So is that anything in the Nye Beach overlay zone?
The C2 portion of the Nye Beach overlay. Because that's a combination of C2 zone and then high density residential, or we call R4.
Mm-hmm.
The residential zones that are within the overlay, R1s, 2, 3, and 4, once they relinquish a license, it's gone. The property is still technically eligible, but the buyer would have to go at the bottom of the wait list.
Right.
And work their way up.
Okay.
We get regular calls every time a property goes on the market in an area where it's attractive to have short-term rentals. We get a number of calls. Real estate community is pretty attuned to what the rules are now, but there's still questions, in terms of, is this particular property eligible? Where are you guys at with the wait list? That kind of thing. So we get, I'm responding to, sometimes upwards of half a dozen a day, usually about two or three a day, but I'm just one person. Sherry's dealing with the number of the calls as well, as is Beth. So, but lots of interest for short-term rentals still, as you might imagine.
Yeah, sure.
Can we charge a fee for being on the wait list?
the fees can be charged for a number of things, but the wait list doesn't really take a whole lot of maintenance for us. We don't spend a lot of time with it. That's the end of that first item on the agenda. Next item up would be the short-term rental enforcement update. I'll turn it over to Jim and Jason.
Hi, everybody. So you can see we've had 14 complaints that were filed with lodging revs, with actually three of them being the same complaint just over 3 days. There's a first strike, one first strike letter and one citation letter issued. Both of those were issued to 1330 Northwest Spring Street, which everybody's aware of. Where we stand on that, citation was issued February 8th. They had a scheduled municipal court date of March 23rd. They had contacted Don and requested an extension, and then last we heard Mr. Neff is having some health issues, so they were going to be contacting Don as soon as he was cleared to be able to come out here and show up for court. So right now we're in a holding pattern. Citation has still been issued, and the first strike is still issued against them. So we're just waiting on getting a court date and seeing what their lawyer has to say and our response to that. You can kind of look at the complaints filed, a couple of lighting issues, not really anything that's covered under the ordinance. So it was discussion between the complainant and the homeowner. And in one of the instances, the emergency contact went out and talked to the renters about turning off the outside lights at night so it didn't bother the neighbor. Noise complaint is the fire pit being too close and the complaint's window, and the renters were noisy past I should have said 2,200 hours after 10 o'clock. The emergency contact was notified and stated that they resolved the issue. Police were also called, and they went out and talked to the renters who said they would turn down the noise and try and go inside. Occupancy complaint, 526 Northwest Coast Street, stated that there were too many people staying there at the time. I sent an email request to the managing entity and have not heard back yet to verify how many people they stated were staying there. Had a couple of other complaints about some past repairs being done because of a fire, and that some loose material was being blown around. They felt it may hit somebody walking by. I went out to the scene. There was no loose material located that was being blown around. Another complaint regarding a water leak and one regarding a broken smoke detector. I contacted the owner, and they had the smoke detector replaced. A few parking complaints. One of them, I was able to locate the vehicles and had the vehicle immediately moved because they came in late and didn't realize that there was a fire hydrant located. It was kind of buried in some grass. The other ones, I'm trying to get some contact from the registered owner. It's regarding a neighbor noticed that there were all off-street parking was being used and some on-street parking. And when they walked by, one of the cars in the driveway were missing. So I'm trying to determine whether that person was no longer there staying at the place or if they just left really quick to like go get groceries and that. So I'm kind of, I'm waiting for some information back on that to decide where I'm gonna go with that. And the trash complaints covered over 3 days. It's a unit I've gotten a trash complaint about before about the cans being left out. They supplied me one photo all 3 days, and it's the same photo covering the same day. So I'm trying to get a hold of the registered owner to find out who is renting that and where his person that comes out and does the cleaning, whether an issue occurred with them, that they couldn't make it out there and take the trash cans in. Right now, because of previous complaints, I'm kind of leaning toward that they're going to be issued a first strike, but I haven't gone through with that just yet until I can make some contact. And that kind of wraps up our enforcement. Yeah, Steve.
On any given weekend, about how many complaints do you get?
I would say it averages one. We usually get them grouped where in 1 week we'll get three, but then we'll go 3 weeks with none coming over okay. The weekend. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other thoughts relative to enforcement?
I guess my only, not even a thought, just a comment. And when we started, we spent a lot of time talking about a complaint process. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we have a process that is working. And so I'm really happy to see, we have issues, but yeah. There's a process that they can be referred to. And looking at the minutes from the last meeting, also, it seems like the education piece is working with the vacation rental managers and the owners to where guests are being informed about what the rules are. And looking at this list over that period of time, it seems pretty positive.
I would agree. When we first started with lodging revs, and even before, we had complaints left and right, and it was a matter of a lot of the owners and the managers not knowing exactly what our ordinance was and then informing them of it. And yes, I think we've gotten better and better understanding of kind of where our ordinance is at. We still have, I mean, we're always gonna have that one that slips by, or the renter that just doesn't care, you know. He understands he's not supposed to have a party, but he's going to anyway. So we're occasionally gonna have that, but I think, yes, the education definitely is helping out, and if we can keep stressing that and keep reinforcing it, I think we'll be in good shape. We seem to have quite a number of people that, you know, are willing to follow it and back us up on it, so.
I think we'll find out more this summer. Last year was a pretty busy summer, and it was still new. I mean, while these ordinances have been around for a while, it was still relatively new. And so the summer is gonna be busier. We know we're gonna receive, there's just a lot more short-term rentals being occupied. And we will monitor the best we can. But I mean, 14 over the course of between January and today is pretty low, which is a good sign, because we know that people have been coming. I mean, Newport's been very busy.
Yeah, I mean, before we were in the same 3 month period, we were doing 30, 40 complaints in that time. So vast improvement. And like the chief said, this summer will be really the first, I think, full summer that we get that we're not either some kind of COVID issue going on. So I think it'll be really good for us to see kind of what a normal, actual normal summer will be like.
And we're getting less with lodging revs, less. My dishwasher doesn't work.
Yes.
The porch lights don't work. You know, they were just using that 1-800 number for everything.
I can't find the keys.
Can't find the keys, yeah. Hot tub's broken. So, and you know, those, they take time, you know, to deal with. Or you don't want to ignore them. You want to make sure the person has the right, you know, call this guy.
Yeah.
Call this number thing. So, time will tell. Stand by for next.
Yeah, how's it working with, because the, if I remember right, manager for the facility is getting notified when there's a lodging rep's complaint now.
So what happens is once the call in, either on the hotline or online, gets the lodging reps, they make contact with whoever the emergency contact is, and then they add notes so that when I come in, I can pull it up and I can see, okay, they, you know, left a voicemail message for the emergency contact, or they actually spoke to them and they said they would be taking care of it. So then I can turn around and follow up with, you know, the manager, or if the complainant left a message, I can contact them too and say, you know, where did you notice that, you know, this the person responded in time, in a timely manner. We have some issues where the lodging reps has not had the updated emergency contact for, I think it was like two or three places. So we were able to correct that by notifying the manager and letting them know. And they're like, oh, didn't even realize, you know, that when we changed that we needed to contact you guys or contact lodging reps. So we've had those issues worked out, and yeah, it seems to be working great through lodging reps.
Yeah, so they're getting a notification right away then.
Yes.
Right.
So yes. And they're leaving good notes that, you know, when they attempted contact or if they made contact and what the response was from the emergency contact.
As an aside, I contacted lodging res on one of the complaints, and the lodging res person was, I mean, they were very polite. I mean, it was a good conversation. They said that they would be contacting the owner, or maybe it was an emergency. Mm-hmm. And I went and checked on it, and it was like an hour and a half later, and they had the trash picked up and cleaned up. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my experience with lodging res, the one time I used them, it was very positive.
Good deal.
And I do have a concern, which is kind of ongoing, that I would like to mention. It doesn't quite fit in any of our categories here, but I know that many of you are aware of it. It's the traffic issue on Ocean View at the intersection of 15th. That is a one-way street on the west side of Ocean View, but it's not really well marked as being a one-way street, and people who aren't familiar with it keep coming up the wrong way. And we had, there's about 8 vacation rentals in the area between Ocean View and Spring Street. There are many timeshares there. I think there's like about 12 timeshares. So there's a lot of construction going on Spring Street also. And they want to take the shortcut. I don't blame them, but it's a one-way street. And I know the city's working on signage, and I know police department has contacted the construction workers and tried to stop people, but that is still an ongoing issue. There's no more signage yet at this point, and summer's coming. I'm just concerned about that intersection. So I just put that forth, just don't forget about it.
We haven't forgotten about it.
Right, I know.
But I think the, you know, streets department's waiting until, we tried to put down the markings when it was too cool, and they did not last very long. And so we've got to wait until we get into consistently warm weather before we can do the pavement markings.
And I do think the pavement markings are going to be might be the most productive of the changes. Because it's just not intuitive to take a left there onto the gravel road.
I think there needs to be a sign that says one-way street at the top of the hill there. Because, you know, people are busy looking at the beautiful ocean, and they just don't see what they're supposed to do. Like,
you can go down the...
Well, yeah, when you first go down, I believe there should be a sign that says one-way street, so at least people would see that. There's...
We won't come back up.
There's a sign at the bottom of the hill, one-way street.
Right, yeah.
No, it says do not enter.
There's a do not enter on the eastbound as you're going uphill.
Oh, it's do not enter.
But by the time you see it, you're sort of already in it, and you just don't know where to go.
I think there was a little bit of environmental design there, because when you had complained about it, I think it was, I went out there on a beautiful sunny day, and I couldn't see the signs. I mean, they were there, but with the sun where it was coming down, I couldn't see anything. So it was once you got to the top of the hill, the sun went away. But I know the Public Works went out and they did some trimming around the signs to clear that up.
We had another sign up.
And there was, I believe there's 2 now, one on either side of the road.
Yeah.
So on a hazy day or things like that, and we just had the construction company was just ignoring them. They were hoping they could just shoot up the hill.
Sure.
They promised to not do it anymore, and that we didn't have any more complaints about the construction. But again, when you have a different renter there every day.
Yeah. And there's new subcontractors coming through all the time, too. So.
But I know Public Works, Dave with Public Works and Justin have a plan.
Yeah.
As soon as the weather stops raining in August, whenever it's going to quit.
Yes, Steve.
I was just curious, what percentage of the vacation rentals in Newport are managed by professional companies such as Sweet Homes or Meredith versus the private individuals or owners? And the follow-up question is, do you find that the troubles are less, more, or about the same for the professionally managed vacation rentals versus the privately managed vacation rentals?
I don't have exact numbers. I mean, I can do a rough guess that I would say at least 75% of the rentals are managed by Vacasa or Sweet Homes or
Meredith.
We get complaints probably across the board about evenly between professionally managed and those that are privately managed. We probably get, I would say, a quicker response out of the ones that are professionally managed, only because they would have somebody to respond, and if that person is available, they always have backup. Whereas a private owner who has his best friend watching it, a call comes in at 2 o'clock in the morning for a problem. Yeah, lodging reps can call that guy and wake him up, and not necessarily would he respond as quickly as probably we'd like. So I think the professionally managed are handled a lot better. It's not 100% though for any of them, but we're finding it's easier to work with those that are professionally managed as far as getting problems resolved.
Thank you.
Anything else related to enforcement? OK, Okay, we'll move to the last item on the agenda, which has to do with the, is an outline of some potential revisions to the short-term rental ordinance. I went ahead and put a copy up on the screen here. I don't know if Sandy's much.
Can you see?
Sandy, are you still there?
She may have dropped.
Yeah, I'm here, and I'm, yeah, I'm looking at the outline of potential revision.
Okay, so you can see that just fine?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, Sandy, I can't see you, so if there's something you want to say, just chime in, okay?
Okay.
All right, so I was just going to run through, these are a few things that we've identified as potential changes or areas where we might want to spend a little bit of time looking at changes to the ordinance. You certainly may have your own thoughts as well. I mean, this is an opportunity to kind of have a candid discussion about that and whether or not any of these need to move forward or whether or not you have thoughts of other things that we weren't thinking about that we need to explore a little bit more in terms of improving the ordinance. But one of the areas, and we actually had, when we put the 2019 set of revisions in there, we had some language that dealt with this, but it fell out before the process was wrapped up. But there were a lot of things in play at that point, and I think that was part of the reason looking at different ways of managing short-term rentals generally. So we were moving lots of pieces around through the process. But that's to address that transition period between short-term rental owners. Specifically, I'm talking about where you have a transferable license in the C2 zones. When that happens, you know, the new owner, you know, has to come in and get a license under their own name. There's time between the closing of the property and when that new owner comes in and gets a license. These units are, you know, especially if it's in the summer season, you've got the unit booked out for several months in some cases. And so we, you know, it's not uncommon when we have these circumstances, they're contacting us saying, can we respect these bookings? We haven't been able to, you know, we're not gonna be able to come in and get a license for a few weeks, but you know, these reservations have been on the books for months. And our stock answer is you can't rent until you have a license or endorsement in your own name because that's how it's structured. I'm fairly confident a number of them just go ahead and respect the bookings anyway, as opposed to contact people who had had reservations and tell them they can't accommodate those reservations because there's been an ownership change. I think it would be a reasonable thing to build in some grace period, you know, a reasonable number of days. We can bring forward some options for you to look at so that new buyers aren't put in that position where they have, you know, they're buying a property that has a number of existing bookings and they're not put in the position of immediately having to cancel bookings or, you know, not get off on the right foot with the city's ordinance. So, thoughts on that one?
What's an appropriate grace period? A week, a month?
I would probably say up to 30 days would seem to be reasonable.
I'm waving my hand. Yes, I think a 30-day grace period would be fair.
What is the processing time from the city's staff once an application is presented to the city? How much time does it take to move that through the administrative processes?
Right, and in these circumstances, these are units that have already, you know, we've already done a lot of work on to get them right to the point where they've already been licensed. So it doesn't take quite as much time, but I think you do have probably about 2 weeks in there because you're arranging for inspections that have to be performed by our building official and fire marshal. And so they need, you know, and part of that has to do with the new buyer's availability and ability to make the unit accessible to us. So that'd be about that.
My view, it would make sense to look at some sort of time period. The people who did reserved under a legal license in a unit that had been inspected. Mm-hmm. They made their reservation under that approved process, and it only makes, to me, it just makes sense to have a grace period.
Sounds reasonable.
Okay.
Fair.
Okay, we'll work up some of that language. Next up, codifying the waitlist procedure. Really, the existing ordinance right now just says where to have a waitlist. It doesn't really say how that waitlist is to be administered, so we kind of had to sort that out internally, just kind of administratively. And so what we've been doing is workable and manageable, giving existing staff resources, which is an annual period where we, once we've cleared the renewal period, which closes on August 15th, we then work through that waitlist. Now, some of the folks on the waitlist, in fact, we often run into a number of folks on the waitlist are no longer interested, so we just continue to move down that list.
Do we keep them on the list in their spot, or do they go to the bottom?
No, we'll strike them if they're no longer interested.
Okay, but if they pass and they're still interested, what happens to them? So there's an opportunity, but they aren't ready to go forward at that time?
Then they go to the bottom of the list. So, yeah, so we work through that. You're right. Sometimes they just, not right now, but maybe in the future, we've got a good rental situation, or, for what, there are lots of reasons why folks are or are not interested. And in some cases, we run in circumstances where they're not eligible because we have another vacation rental on the same street segment, for example. They put their names on the wait list, knowing that in many cases, and just hoping that that one will go away by the time their name comes up. So that happens as well. But we work through that, and we give them 60 days to, get an application into us. And then that'll start the application review process. Once we have an application from them, they basically have until the next renewal period to get that complete and get themselves up and running. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, it's not uncommon for us to have folks take a number of months after they've submitted the application, before they're ready to actually complete the process and be fully licensed. And with contractors and getting contractors to do work on homes, just how difficult and challenging that is, given existing market conditions, that's another factor that plays into it. But our thought is, we explain this verbally to a lot of people, but it would be nice to go ahead and codify those procedures in the ordinance if you guys are comfortable with that.
I think it'd be a good idea.
No, I'm waving my hand again. Yes.
Thanks, Sandy.
I like that. I like that solution.
Yeah, I think it's a nice one. It's in black and white instead of depending on interpretation. So,
seems like, Derek, when a person who isn't quite ready yet goes to the bottom of the list, something doesn't strike me right about that. Especially if somebody else on the same block, he was ahead of them, all of a sudden jumps up and then they're never going to get a license. So I'm wondering if, I don't know, I'm just thinking about having to go back to the bottom of the pile.
The other problem, though, someone's on the list and they just kind of are blocking anyone else from
moving up.
And they don't really
But if they're not ready, then you can give it to the next person, right?
Yeah, we just move down the wait list.
Yeah.
And until we've had enough takers to exhaust the number of available licenses.
Let's say they've been on the wait list for 2 years, and all of a sudden they say, well, we're not quite ready, maybe next month. But then they go to the bottom of the list again.
Those that are in that kind of circumstance tend to submit an application because as we've explained the process, they get an application and then advise them a few months. The ones that say they're not ready, I think, are looking, we're not ready for probably another year or more, in that kind of category. If it's just another month, those are the folks that tend to go ahead and apply, knowing that they have some time to work with their tenant or whatever issue it was that's holding them back before they actually go full license. Because if they apply once it's available, they basically have a year to get up and running. Close to it.
Assuming they can get a license, right?
Yeah, if they're eligible for a license.
Yeah.
But we can work some language and you can mull that over and we can have another conversation about it once we actually have this in black and white.
What happens if you give them a license, they don't activate the rental?
If they, well, the next time the renewal period comes up, they have a 30-day utilization requirement, and they would not be able to renew. That's how that would work.
So if you give them a license and they never rent, then city doesn't get any income, right?
Right, and then they can't renew. The next renewal period, they have to come in and show that they rented it at least 30 days in a calendar year, and they can't do it.
And there's something, if we give them a license, they need to activate it by a certain period of time, or do they can sit vacant for, that license can sit vacant for a whole year?
Well, remember so they're notified in the fall. They have 60 days to tell us if they're going to apply. They apply towards the end of the year, then they have until August of that following year to be fully licensed. So it's about 8 months. Once they're fully licensed, once they're fully licensed, then they're subject to a 30-day, utilization within a 12-month period requirement.
Oh, okay, so they have, once they're fully licensed, then they can only sit vacant for 30 days?
They have to rent at least 30 days.
30 days in a calendar year.
Yeah, so they have to rent it at least 30 days in a calendar year. That's what we have in the code, unless modified by the city manager, and we did have cause to do that because of COVID in the past, but fingers crossed,
In construction, too.
Yeah, we did have that situation where we had an entire complex under construction for an extended period of time where they couldn't rent because the common areas were all tore up.
Okay.
Do we have an audit procedure that verifies somebody is renting their place?
Yeah, room tax. Number of days room tax comes in covered. So that's how that would be done. Okay. So we'll put that on the list of as well. All right, scope of permissible changes to licensed vacation rentals. So we've run into this on a number of occasions. Where somebody has an existing licensed unit and they want to make another bedroom available that was not part of their original license, and they have sufficient off-street parking for it. They just weren't licensed at that level. Or they want to change where their off-street parking is because they're doing a renovation to the house, and so they want to change where their driveway and parking areas are. So some form of change. We've been accommodating that, but it would be nice to put in the code that, that's explicitly okay. Now, if they're making a new bedroom available, we have to inspect it. And so we are requiring them to pay a special inspection fee for that, which is something we have under our fee structure. But,
waving hand again, is this, would this require a motion today?
I'm just looking for a general consensus that these are items you'd like to see in a draft code update, and so you'd have a chance in the future to see the specific language. At that point, I think we'd be looking at a motion, but not today.
Okay. Okay. Well, yes, I think it's a great idea on the scope of permissible changes.
That happened quite often there.
It happens periodically.
Somebody just built another room onto their house.
Yeah, or they make a room that wasn't suitable originally because it lacked adequate egress, and they didn't want to go to the expense of addressing that by modifying a window or something like that. That's a scenario where that's come up. They say, okay, now we have the resources to do it. Mm-hmm. We want to make this room available now. And we've had circumstances, like I mentioned, where people were doing a remodel that wasn't adding bedrooms, but forced them to have to change where their driveway was and their parking and all that because they were doing a kind of a larger shuffling around of on their property. And so, those are the most common circumstances. Seem reasonable then? Mm-hmm. Hearing no objections, I want to check that one.
Seems reasonable.
All right. Non-re-
license-related code violations. We've had circumstances, and it's not just one property, you know, where, you know, for one, it's say somebody's converting a portion of the unfinished area in a house without permits into new bedrooms. Balance of the house is a licensed short-term rental. Should that be a strike against the short-term rental? Would it be a more effective or incentive for compliance to put that kind of language in there that said, look, if you're doing unpermitted work on the property or you're using a separate dwelling on the property in a way that's impermissible, or, you know, there, that says these are things that have come up, that would be a strike against the short-term rental use, because that's a three-strike, you're out program. So, you know, we could do that.
This has come up a lot where we have had violations that are not STR violations, but they're violations.
Yep.
And really nothing we can, I mean, we issue the license or issue a violation for XYZ ordinance, but does not have any bearing on their short-term rental. And so this would be, take all of the guesswork out of it for the police department on when to, one, what is a strike, what is not a strike. We wouldn't have to meet with Derek, have to meet with the city attorney and try to come up with an interpretation of what just occurred. Does this apply to an STR, does it not? So many of those are very gray. And we want all of our rentals to comply. We want voluntary compliance. So if they comply with all of our ordinances, it makes it a lot easier.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And I believe that has actually come up as a request from some who've been critical about how enforcement process has been working today.
So the enforcement is consistent across any property, right? The ordinance is
correct.
The ordinance.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's STR or a private residence, you can't just put an outhouse or, you know, it has to be codes, right?
Correct. We, you know, if you're not meeting one of the city's municipal codes, it's, you know, it's a compliance issue. I think this gets more to how we address that violation. And if we connect the non-STR related violations on a property to one's STR license, then that's a further incentive, the person who holds that very valuable license, to operate in line with city ordinances. And as Jason says, it takes the guesswork out of some circumstance where, is this really a violation of this STR ordinance or another city ordinance like our nuisance code?
Like, I guess, just from my view, then we would apply that, but only to 178 residences in the city, and the other ones wouldn't have that standard, correct?
Correct, because they don't have short-term rental licenses.
The ordinance is enforced 100%.
Okay. The ordinance would still be enforced.
That's my.
They would get a citation and a requirement to appear before the municipal court judge.
Yeah, everybody should.
Right.
Everybody does. But if you're a short-term rental, you get a citation and a warning letter or a strike.
I understand.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Waving again. I would
the
be
voice
for,
from the clouds.
Beware. I would be in favor of the citation and the strike.
You mean keep them separate, or if
no?
She agrees.
Okay. Yeah. I'm tracking.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Derek, I didn't really hear others. Do they agree?
Oh, yeah.
I think it makes
yes.
sense.
Great.
There are some things you can do without permits, though, right? I mean,
yes.
Yeah, so you have to be careful when you go into this modification. And if it's non-structural, then you might be able to do it without a permit.
Yeah, the circumstance I'm thinking about was full-on non-compliant work. I mean, not, and we're talking about putting bedrooms in an unfinished space. You know, you're talking about the electrical into the rooms, the new partition.
Like one of the citations was you mentioned that converting a garage into a party room, no? As, would that be a citation?
If it requires a permit.
Exactly. That depends on the nature of what they were doing.
Yeah, and what I've been able to find out so far, and it hasn't risen to any violations, that they were setting up like a ping pong table in one side of the garage. And so there was no, nothing being built. It's just they were using the garage as a game room. So technically that took away two spots of a off-street parking. So they didn't violate any STR ordinance, and they technically didn't any building codes or anything, because there was no actual construction done. They're just utilizing the garage, not as a garage, but as a game room.
So in a situation like that, it wouldn't be a strike, right?
I think the only time we would have something like that would be if they were relying upon the parking in the garage as their off-street parking for their STR bedrooms. Then it would be a strike, because they're no longer providing the required off-street parking they agreed to as part of their STR license. But if they had the off-street parking as, say, in driveways, then it's just a remodel of a portion of their house. It's no big, I mean, they're free to do that. We've had both. We've had a circumstance where required parking was in the garage, and the garage parking was taken away because it was turned into a game room. But that's not the circumstance Jim's talking about. No. So we've had both flavors.
In that case, it wasn't a code violation, but correct, it was a strike because it didn't have the required parking for the application rules.
Okay. Streamlining the renewal process. Jamie would be jumping up and down, clapping right now if she were here, which is a legitimate, she has some legitimate concerns about it. I included a copy of the packet. There's a lot of paper in there, a lot of different forms that have to be completed, both on the business licensing side and then on the endorsement side, handled in our office. And we can do better than that. We can streamline that. Ideally, we'll transition to an online renewal at some point, but I don't have a schedule for that, and that requires coordination with the finance department. The finance department has a number of things kind of backed up right now. But that would also involve, you know, going online with room tax collections, which is another piece of the puzzle. But that said, we can still streamline this by kind of reducing the amount of paper that persons renewing their license have to sort through, while still ensuring that certain critical pieces of information are provided annually, because that was the intent. We need to make sure and verify insurance policies are still in place on an annual basis. That's one of the bigger time consumptive things that we have to do, is people don't submit the renewal, their insurance information with the renewal, and then, oh, that I forgot to renew that, now I gotta go take care of that. So, you know, the parking photos, that's another thing that's important to do annually, because, you know, those off-street parking space have to be made available. That can get lost in the shuffle, and all of a sudden, you know, one of the driveway spaces is now being used for storage of something and no longer available. That's a way for us to catch that. And then just a simple confirmation that they recognize that, you know, there are certain things, such as keeping their, you know, smoke detectors and things of that operational, ongoing operational requirements, that we wanted to check off that they've actually looked at that and verify, yeah, all these things are still in place. But that can be done without filling out five forms, and I think we could do to make that change, and that may require a couple of adjustments in the ordinance to make the streamlining work right.
That's a good idea.
Here's one that's come up on a few occasions. I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Just on that, Derek, would you have a completely separate form for renewal than for the initial application?
Yeah, I'm thinking we probably would.
That's streamlined.
That's more streamlined. It doesn't have all of the same stuff on it. Mm-hmm. And we'll work with finance, too, so that they're not having to resubmit business license forms. Maybe we can consolidate that into a single form. So
All right, next one, spacing standards, okay. The way we adopted this ordinance, we put in place a spacing standard that says only one building on a street segment can have a vacation rentals in it. This was done to address concerns that were raised, particularly in high-interest areas like Nye Beach, where folks were concerned about entire streets no longer being residential in nature because, you know, half of the homes or more get converted over to vacation rentals. And one of the things that's come up, and I can think of the properties, the specific property I'm thinking of is one immediately north of Don Davis Park, where you have a cluster of little dwellings, all on the same property owned by the same individual. One of them is actually a licensed vacation rental. The rest aren't. There was a change in their ownership. I think the family was going through some estate issues, and they were trying to sort out who has control of what. And they, you know, they inquired, "What is it even possible for us to get a vacation rental license for one of the other small dwellings on this same commonly owned property?" And we said, "Well, no, not the way we set this up." That one, you know, we don't have a lot of those out there, but we do that specific one, and I can probably think of a couple more that might make some sense. The trickier part is if you extend that, and this has come up as well. We've had somebody up who has a property that is up by the skate park, and we have a condominiumized project up there where you have a number of homes, small homes that were built, I want to say, in the mid-2000s, right there on the west side of the skate park, on the gravel road there. And one of those is a vacation rental. One of the other individuals would like to become a vacation rental at some point. They all have a common area. They own the homes, but it's all common ground under a condominium association. And they're saying, well, why can't that be viewed akin to just as one space, not multiple spaces? We have more of those examples than we do of the first one I was talking about. Or we keep it the same.
Because they're under separate ownership, aren't they?
Homes are, in that case, the homes are under separate ownership because they own the home, the improvement, but the land is under an association. It's a condo association. So it's under common ownership in terms of the ground. So they're not on separate parcels per se. They're on one parcel owned by the association.
Go with the house or the owner?
I'm sorry?
Has the license go to the house or the owner?
Mm-hmm. Well, these licenses, well, the owners are the ones that are licensed, but they're licensed at a particular premises. And the way the code reads is one building only for vacation rental purposes on a street segment, which is, you know, your block.
But the license belongs to an owner, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So we have multiple owners then, right?
Well, in this case, you have individual owners owning individual units, buildings.
Right.
But they're on a piece of property that's under an association ownership, which is multiple owners.
So the skate park, which that complex you're talking about, has four units on one parcel.
Correct.
Only one can be a short-term rental.
Right, which is the case right now, which knocks out the opportunity for the rest of them.
So if that has changed to where all four, half, whatever the group decides, what keeps somebody that has a large piece of property from building an accessory dwelling unit and applying for that to be a short-term rental?
See, that would be an option. That would be an option if they had a single family and an accessory dwelling unit. Again, this is subject to the license cap.
Right. Well, but they could be on a
waiting list. So if there's no available license, there's no available license.
I think the spacing was a huge issue in the whole discussion. I think that would be potentially opening a can of worms, but
it would, I think, yeah.
Okay.
Like there's a condos up by on Meganson. I think one of those units is a short-term rental. And to have all eight of them be short-term rentals, I don't think
Meganson up by the golf course.
Golf course. Yeah.
That's all. Nothing's permitted up there anyway. I mean, that's all outside.
Yeah, I'm saying if somebody built something like that in an area
where it is permitted.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's a can of worms, because now you're dealing with multiple owners, you know?
Well, I mean, we have, on Coast Street, we have, what, two condominium buildings where multiple owners, and we have, you know, multiple short-term rentals. It's all under the condominium association. They share, you know, 701 Coast Street or whatever, and they each own individual units in there, and they have, you know, X, Y, and Z, you know, 6, 8 people in there have STR licenses. So you have the condominium association on High Street. You have one owner. Technically, I mean, if you look at how we have it on Coast Street, you could have more than one STR located on same address, separate building, and technically not violate, unless we're putting the condominium buildings that are on Coast Street under a different kind of classification.
Well, are you talking about North buildings, or which ones are you talking about?
One's at like 701, and then there's one on Alpine.
Yeah, well, those are circumstances where you have multiple condominium units used as vacation rentals in a single building, which is permissible under this rule, under the code as drafted now. We have a number of those circumstances where you have a large, what was originally built as a condominium motel type arrangement. That's what a number of these were. They were intended for seasonal use from day one. Now, under our structure, they're permissible because it's one building. And so you can have 7 of them, okay, in some cases, in one building.
So that's how the Embarcadero can have multiple.
But in the Embarcadero has a kind of a similar setup, but that doesn't extend to the situation, which is kind of the opposite, which is what you have on that property, say, for example, right next to Donna Ann Davis Park, which is multiple little
separate buildings.
Buildings, okay, on the same property. And it's under one owner.
Yeah.
And they only get to use one of those units as a vacation.
I don't see it any different than multiple houses. I mean, what's the difference between being attached and not attached, and you have separate owners?
That would be the argument. You're doing the counter argument.
I'm saying that it's no different than if you have a condominium project with 10 units on one side of the street,
mm-hmm,
and then you have 10 houses separated on the other side of the street, all under separate ownerships. What's the difference? Well, there should only be one unit available in the condos and one unit available on the other side of the street. I could see if it were under one ownership, there might be some argument, but separate owners, I mean, it gets to be real sticky.
But we are that way. If the condos are all in one structure right now,
yeah,
that structure is the...
is permissible.
Yeah, so you can have multiple. They're all physically in one building.
Yeah, the logic behind it was that one building on a street segment in of itself, if it's used for vacation rental purposes, isn't going to change the nature of the entire street segment. Whether or not it's one condo in the building or 7 condos in that one building, it's still that one building on that one small portion of the larger street segment. That was the logic behind it.
Well, how is this different than on the one by the skate park? I don't understand what.
The one by the skate park is 3, I believe, 3 separate houses.
Four.
4 separate houses on that location. They have, I think they share a garage, or there's 2 garage buildings, and then there's 4 separate houses built on that one lot.
Or are they attached?
Detached.
They're not attached.
They're detached.
They're just right next to each other?
Yes. They're in a little cluster around a common area.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's very little space between the houses.
Not a great deal of space.
When you look at them, it almost looks like one structure. So.
Right.
Yeah, they're not a whole lot of, but they are independent structures.
So
what's the problem with, I mean, and they're under separate ownership, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct. The units are under separate ownership.
So you're saying we should now, what you're proposing is to, because they're attached, we should allow the whole thing to be a vacation rental? Is that what you're saying?
They're not attached.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're attached or not attached, if they're on the same parcel, they're on the same parcel. That's a reasonable way to look at it. I don't have strong feelings one way or the other on this one, but we have had people ask us repeatedly in these circumstances whether or not that would be
permissible. We've told them no. They struggle with the rationale. And this would be an opportunity to address that if you want
to. These would still be under the cap?
Still under the cap.
So then I'm just trying to think what's the advantage of this? Who would have the advantage of that?
Okay, so if you had that one unit that he was talking about, mm-hmm. and there are four different owners, and they mm-hmm. buy it basically as a condominium kind of freestanding, and with the expectation that it's going to be a little, you know, you're going to know your neighbor or whatever, and instead mm-hmm. They have people, and to get to the end one, they have to go in front of a unit.
Right.
If you were the front unit and you had people lugging suitcases and coming and going and in that within that area, I could see where that doesn't make it convenient. You know, I mean, yeah. it destroys the continuity yeah. of what you bought your house for yeah. to be in this little community. You know, having one is different having two, but what if you had three? So you have three people coming and going in different days and here and there. Whereas in the building like on Alpine, you know, you take an elevator, you feel like you're in a hotel anyway, and the units, you're not really seeing your neighbor or knowing your neighbor. They're not walking through, you know, you're sitting down to eat, and these people are, I mean, if you're in buildings, you would have an appreciation for why. If I were an owner there, I would not want three of the units or two of the units. You know, maybe one because it was there, but that's the that situation.
I agree with that.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, thank you. You said it well.
I agree with that because the whole idea about the spacing standard was to spread them out so you don't mm-hmm. congregate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like no.
That's fine. That gives me something to report back to the people who ask us.
Okay. So Cynthia said.
No, I don't do that.
And Deepmar. All
right. I might do that.
And Sonia. Yeah.
And Sonia. Right. Yeah.
Right. I think the last one I had here, this I would recommend creating some process for considering adjustments to the license cap so that it gets in front of the council at a regular interval and the council can say yay or nay, but not just be out there as a potential that never gets addressed. We get that question pretty frequently since we've been at the license cap of 176 for some time, and the ordinance allows the council to adjust that up to 200. When's the council going to consider that? We don't know. We don't have, you know, at this point, there's been no discussion. That's usually about adjusting that. That's about all we can say. But I think it would be prudent to set maybe annually, and maybe this gets worked into, you know, how this moves once this committee wraps up its work, is an annual report, potentially after a renewal period, where we provide, okay, here's where we're at, you know, in terms of licenses. This is where the wait list is at. What do you want to do? And you can say yay or nay.
No. I don't want to have a huge, I mean, I would prefer to not have a huge public discussion and a bunch of pressure on this with lobbyists on both sides yeah. coming at us once a year. That's my personal preference.
That number could go up, that number could go down.
I was so glad to get rid of this short-term rental thing on the council. And you're talking about giving it to us every year? I don't think so.
Derek, wasn't the 176 based on a percentage of?
Not exactly.
Sort of.
That was a consideration.
Negotiated number.
It was a negotiated number. It was, yeah. You know, the amount of our housing that's tied up. But, you know, I mean, I guess we can just keep telling people we don't know when it's ever going to get considered again. But, I mean, to have an ordinance that says, you can not more than 200, but the actual number will be set by council resolution, which is currently 176. When is that reconsidered? How does somebody, do they just go and ask? Well, maybe we can just say you can write a letter to the council if you want to. I mean, it does put us in a little bit of a difficult position too, because that's what the ordinance says.
You have this ambiguity created by between 200 and 176.
Right.
It'd make more sense to just say it's 176. and get rid of the 200.
And then it would have to be done by.
There's nothing that creates a question. If the council wanted to increase the number at some point, they could, but this lightning rod is removed. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, to try and find some sort of basis, what would be the basis that you would take an agenda item to the council? You know, is it just on an annual thing? I think you just create, as was suggested, create opportunities for rancor and a contest.
That's a fair point.
So,
you know, if it was a number in a ordinance, then it's okay, that's the number unless the ordinance is updated, and that's a full legislative process. But right now we have a resolution that sets a number below what the ordinance says the maximum could be, and it can be adjusted by council resolution at any meeting. So then it's, what's the process?
I think there's probably 24 people that might want a license, but there's also another 10,000 that don't want it. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, we took a long time for this, Derek, to get them up with 176, and I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think to make the council go through this every year, I think is very stressful. That was probably one of the most stressful ones we had. I don't know what the magic answer is on that, but I don't know.
I mean, you know, anybody's free to write a letter or send a letter to you. I mean, that's one thing we can just tell them is if you feel like you need it.
Complaint driven, then that might be the way to do it.
Well, or someone's requesting the cap be increased as an example.
Because they've been on the waitlist.
Forward a letter to the council. Council would say,
I think it should go to the planning commission first anyway.
Well, anybody could also request.
Because the big concern on this, you know, we saw what happened at the county level. And I really get concerned when we start weighing into this that we may have a county-like referendum, you know, initiated, you know, here as well. And I think we found a balance that is tolerable. You know, neither side likes it, but it's kind of a tolerable balance that we seem to find. And
the wounds are just healing from it.
Yeah.
And it may be if that wait list gets to 4 or 5 years, you're going to end up having people on that wait. Just start sending letters in, and we'll just tell them you can submit a letter to council if you want to have that, you know, resolution number reconsidered. I mean we have to be able to tell people something, because right now it's sitting at about 3 years and we get the moans and groans. 4 or 5, you know, I fully expect people to say, hey, this isn't reasonable, we want to talk to our policy.
That downside is the number could go down when you open this discussion up.
Yeah, you're going to pack this room if you say the city's mm-hmm. considering increasing the vacation rental. I think it's,
someone could petition to reduce the number.
And we could reduce the number too. That'd be more people coming in.
Yeah. I think 176 is arbitrary as it is.
Don't you think that this has been a regulation long enough that if somebody does want a license, they know that there's going to be a long wait list? I mean, it's not like you're going to buy a property and want to have a vacation rental and not first know that it's at least 2 to 3. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, they kind of already know that. So whether it's 2 years or 3 years or 4 years, you know, it doesn't really, they should know that and have just accepted it at this point in time.
Go ahead.
I'm waiting. Oh, I was just going to put my 2 cents worth in listening to your discussion. And I think having a number, you know, not 176 to 200, but 176, that's it, would. And then people, if they're upset, they're going to write, you know, saying, write to your counselor. Or
write the mayor.
City manager.
So what you're saying is do pick this up with the package of ordinance changes, but just eliminate the reference to 200 and get rid of the resolution aspect.
Yeah.
I think that'd be better, yeah.
Right.
Because nothing's going to be done lightly one way or another.
Right.
Right.
Okay, eliminate resolution option.
We'll do that. Those were the seven or so items that we'd flagged. You did receive, and I've brought it back periodically, the, you know, email from Cheryl Connell. It was back in February of 2020, and they provided that, she and others, at a time that they thought the short-term rental work group was going to be making ordinance change recommendations more quickly than has played out. Some of those issues have been addressed, such as the automated email confirmation through the hotline and online incident reporting. That piece has been taken care of. But they had other recommendations, such as going with a time certain phase out of vacation rentals outside the overlay, and addressing code enforcement on weekends. You know, when most of the incidents occur, we don't have CSO available. They wanted to see those changes, and I think it would be prudent for the work group to say whether or not you're prepared to entertain those or not at some point, so we can get some closure to that and then not come back up.
So from a process standpoint, when do you envision a final report coming from this group?
It's going to try to get it lined up for that September timeframe.
For the fall meeting?
Yeah, the fall meeting.
Because seemed to me there were some other issues that were still hanging out there, but I go through my notes
okay.
As far as other potential adjustments. So you're anticipating one more meeting before the fall meeting, or are you anticipating?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one more meeting, and then where I have these okay. Revisions.
So if there's any other issues that
pick them up at that point,
we can pick them up at the next meeting.
But on these last items, on the Cheryl February 2020 email, thoughts?
The one thing that always has been, and we kind of evolved through this process a bit, is the basis for strikes. And I think we've got a little more clarity on what constitutes a strike or not. I'm wondering if that needs to be, there's anything that needs to be clarified in the ordinance on that. Because again, we had originally we had some confusion about what actually constituted a strike. And then there was also a question about what happens if someone wants to appeal a strike, which I don't think we have any process for that. Maybe we shouldn't either.
Carol brings up under the first one policy changes the phase out period in the non overlay zone. What's in there?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some general, there's at least when I talk to some people in my neighborhood, there's some confusion over that. Some people think, yeah, there's going to be a phase out. And I, you know, it's like, no, there isn't going to be a phase out. So I think we ought to come up and say there's going to be a phase-out or there's not going to be a phase-out, definitively.
Yeah. Well, there is a phase-out with ownership change, but
right.
Yeah, but not before that. So.
Right, but there are some people that think that they're still going to
right,
be,
right.
Because it was talked about when we were doing this originally.
So, yeah, I think you probably want to address that specifically. If you're comfortable with the language as it's working now,
yeah.
You want to see you're comfortable with the language it's wording now. If you want to go with something different, like a fixed period phase out, I think you probably might want to just address that squarely. Right now, we're looking at what we did this ordinance in 2019. I want to say we had about 47, 48 or so outside the overlay at that time.
Yeah.
We're down to about 38 right now.
Mm-hmm. It's weeding itself out, but I mean,
that's the ownership change aspect
right,
of it,
the ownership
how
change
it's set
aspect.
Up.
I've helped with that. I've helped with that.
I mean, if you're comfortable with the language as is, I think it'd be good to go on record that you're comfortable with the language as is in that regard, or if you want to see it changed to, you know, by X date, then.
I just think that when we come out with whatever.
Yeah, we should respond to some of the.
We ought to respond to some of these, and that one we should just, you know, I don't know if we need to bold print it, but we ought to just put in there the language that we presently have and make sure that that's in there and we don't leave it just hanging out there for somebody to have to wade through the city ordinances. Not that, you know, they're nice bedtime stories to read. Helps you go to sleep quicker.
So Derek, on that, item, we started with 48 active vacation rentals outside the overlay, and we're currently at 38.
It's something like that. So I can get it specific. It was in the mid-40s somewhere, 47, 48.
Four-year period, that's been reduced by 20%. Mm-hmm. That seems like, when you use the term phase out, that seems to kind of match what's happening in phases.
It is a phase out. It's just over the ownership change versus a set term.
Right, which means some of those units may very well continue as vacation rentals for many, many years.
Most of the ones that were dropped happened right at the start of the period, though, I think.
We did have a number of them drop fairly quickly, and then over the next.
And then it hasn't changed much over this past year.
Correct, over the last year.
That's.
Yeah, it'd be kind of interesting if we can, I think it'd be good to share with council kind of a year by year on the renewals on the outside the overlay zone so folks can see, you know, exactly what Cynthia was talking about.
I'm waving. That sounds like a good idea. what Spencer just said.
Spencer, I gotta go, guys. I gotta pick up my granddaughter. Wednesday is early release.
Early release.
Everyone, yeah.
I think one of the other big ones off of Cheryl's email had to do with the CSO enforcement on weekends. That would be.
But Cynthia's trying to fix that, so.
Yes. Yeah. At the budget meeting last night, I asked for a third CSO so that weekends could be covered.
Okay.
The reception was.
You asked for
Elizabeth.
Thank you.
What did you ask for, Cynthia?
I asked for CSO. For the third CSO.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you did.
Okay. So the reception of that comes up in 3 weeks.
Oh, okay.
Yes, so this was the idea stage. The what ends up being in the budget will be determined in 3 weeks. So.
And just for the record, or off the record.
You're on the record, though.
We the police department accept, you know, any extra positions we can get, we can utilize. But there's a lot more moving parts to adding positions because we have a collective bargaining agreement which outlines hours worked, days worked, days off, things like that. While those are subject to change through negotiations and, you know, hiring somebody with a different set of standards or a different expectation is a lot easier than making current people, we'd have to negotiate it through the contract. It is a valid point. That itself is not a full-time position, being available on weekends for short-term rental stuff. But with all the other mandates and things that we have in regards to nuisance and camping, it would definitely be utilized, but not
just for that.
Not just for short-term. There's not enough call for us to say, yeah, that's a full-time job.
I think that's why you spelled it out as well. So she had other things that they were going to do as well. So.
I saw the list. Yeah, I was like, wow. It looks like a fun job.
When is the collective bargaining agreement up for?
They're just in year one. Oh, two more years.
Two more years, okay.
But through mutual agreement, they can go back to the table with Spencer.
Yeah, we can do an MOU if there's a basis to do so.
Different than the county, then.
So my plan will be to bring back some specific code language in line with what we talked about here. What I'm hearing is there's general agreement that you as a work group will want to address the specifically the items in Cheryl's email, just so that there's some closure to those issues.
Yeah, I think we need to have a closure to those
which items. Which I think would be a
a wise thing to do, so that they know that kind of where the work group stood once.
Yeah, and council understands.
And the council understands, and it's not something that's out there that was never clearly responded to.
But I think the other thing too is any members of this group, if there's any other of these items that, you want to look at discussing, you know, it's kind of the last call will be the next meeting.
Correct.
To add them to the list.
Right, so, yeah, it's sooner, at any time, just drop me an individual email if there's an issue you want brought before the group. I'll make sure it gets worked into the.
Agenda.
Agenda. That's all we had, and we're looking close to the end of our time. Anything else for the good of the order? Did we had any public comment? Did you guys want to say anything else, or?
Commented.
We're done.
Interspersed in the meetings.
That's right.
Sandy, great to have you back.
That was very helpful, thank you.
Oh, yeah, there's Sandy again.
There she is.
Yeah, she's back, and I got the document off of there.
Good to see you.
Thank you. I guess I'll see you, chief, at six.
Yep, you coming in person?
Yeah.
Very nice.
No, you should have told them you needed to get the Zoom thing set up for you. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and sign off, Sandy.